This ball's drilled to center field. Well hit. Jacoby Jones going back. He'll look up. This ball's off the fence. It bounces away from him. We could have George circling the bases. He's headed to third. He's going to be waved home. The throw will not be made. Head first slide for an inside the park home run. League leading number 16 on the year is an inside the parker.
That was awesome.
Two more hits. Three more runs for George Springer. The Astros wallop the Tigers again, 11-4. They have now won seven games in a row as this team has really gotten things going against some of the inferior teams in the American League.
It was just God balancing the scales and Houston team taking advantage of Jacoby Jones not catching the ball.
Well,
that was not bad at all.
We were wondering what was going to happen because they had gone through the first basically month of the season continuing to play good teams. You know, the Yankees, the Twins, the Indians, and now they finally, the schedule has lightened up basically the last week or so, and they've won 10 of their last 11 games, and they've done a very nice job.
Yeah, it's been nice. I'm more excited about the upcoming games. They've got two series with Boston back-to-back, essentially, with the White Sox in between, and they have the Chicago Cubs coming to town to wrap up the month. So the back half of May going to be a little bit more difficult for the Astros. So we'll see if they are able to keep this up against those teams. You would think that they would be. The lineup has really been awesome, especially the back of it. Aledmys Diaz, really, the last two games has been a nice stand-in for Jose Altuve.
My guy, Aledmys Diaz.
Just don't let him play on the left side of the infield.
He's playing better now than Altuve was when Altuve got injured. So I think it's pretty obvious what they need to do. If Luno has any guts at all, bench Jose Altuve.
Trade Jose Altuve,
yeah. No, but Diaz, after the opening series of the season where everybody was ready to run Diaz out of town, it's been nice to see him make some really nice plays in the field over the last just two games alone. And he's been solid in the field. And then obviously, like, you knew what he could do at the plate.
Yes.
But it's Diaz is going to be another one of these guys, kind of like Chirinos is also this year, that they're doing just like they've done with pitchers. They're better players when they get here. It's really cool.
Next headline, the Blazers now know how we feel. They fall to the Warriors 116-94 in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. Steph Curry scored a game-high 36 points, leading the media to question Portland head coach Terry Stotts.
You know, Houston had some success, you know, trapping Steph and really getting out on him. Is this sustainable for you guys to keep dropping the big so far?
I can't remember. When he had 33 in the second half, were they trapping then?
Yes.
They were? And he scored 33 in the second half?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll look at that.
All right, there's Terry Stotts. Last night, they dropped their pick and roll coverage against Steph Curry. Kind of a weird strategy. Didn't really seem to work.
Come on, Terry Stotts. I don't expect him to have watched every game in the last series, but he knows that the Rockets did a pretty damn good job of not letting any of the Warriors get open three-point shots until Steph Curry, all due credit to him for the performance he had in the last game. But
Curry struggled up until Kevin Durant got hurt.
Yeah.
Are you guys rooting for the Warriors in this series?
I like Damian Lillard a lot, and I am rooting for the Blazers, but the odds of the Blazers even winning a game in this series, I think, are pretty slim. This is a mismatch of epic proportions. And, you know, to the people that thought that any team had a chance other than the Rockets against the Warriors in the Western Conference playoffs, you're crazy.
In the Western Conference, yeah. I'm not rooting for the Warriors, and I've come down a little bit. Yesterday, I was still angry to the point where I had said, no, I don't want to see the Warriors do well. It doesn't help me feel better about the Rockets losing. I'm coming back towards the, hey, let's remember that, yeah, the Rockets are getting crushed for basically being the team that's put up the best fight against the Warriors for the last 2 years. So I would like to, just for the sake of, like, resetting people's brains locally, let's remember how good the Warriors are, and that just because you can't beat them in the playoffs doesn't mean that you need to trash everything and get rid of everybody.
I'm rooting for the Warriors because if they roll through the rest of the playoffs, especially the West, it'll make me feel like 1-2% better. And that's what I would like. If they roll through the postseason, that'll make me feel slightly better. Not good, slightly better.
If they run through the playoffs, Mike, do you feel like, though, there's a better chance that Golden State brings back just about everyone outside of Kevin Durant?
Oh,
I feel like if they lose, there's maybe a chance that Klay Thompson or Draymond Green leaves.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so, just because, well, especially Klay, because he is beloved in that city.
I'm just holding out for anything, though.
You know? Okay. I think they'll change some things up, but yeah, I think they'll bring back as many guys as they realistically can. The Pelicans last night won the NBA draft lottery. They fall from the 7th spot to secure the number 1 overall pick. That gives them the right to take Duke superstar Zion Williamson. My feeling this morning, guys, is this is bad for the NBA. The NBA would have been way better off if Zion ended up in New York, Atlanta, or Los Angeles.
No.
Not better off?
No.
This is a good night for the league?
This is a great night for the league.
How so?
Because you have two markets that don't traditionally get discussed getting two really good players. Ja Morant's going to Memphis. Memphis, who somehow all the grit and grime, they were really a team last year that it was like a bunch of guys off the street, essentially, for most of the last season. And the New Orleans Pelicans said no to the Los Angeles Lakers. It is better for a team like the Pelicans, who seem to actually have a set of balls, or the Memphis Grizzlies to get good players than it is for the Knicks and the Lakers. People are always going to talk about the Knicks and the Lakers. They're both dysfunctional franchises, and it's hilarious to watch them continue to fail.
They're always going to talk about them, but as much as I really enjoy watching the Lakers suck. I don't enjoy watching the Knicks.
I love watching the Knicks
suck. And maybe it's because it's been so long, but I think there's something to be said, even in this age of social media, because I know a few listeners were telling me that yesterday. And I can see the point where you say, well, in the age of social media, it doesn't matter where your stars are. Look at Oklahoma City. Look at these other places. There's still something about there being a big-time team in New York or L.A., like in one of those huge, glitzy cities.
The Brooklyn Nets made the playoffs.
It adds a certain cachet. Right, but that's Brooklyn. It's not the same as...
Pick the good team.
It's not the same as Madison Square Garden. You know, it's...
Yeah, there's better arena.
There's something about the Garden's
a nice place. They revamped in the last 10 years.
Yeah, wow. That's awesome.
Seriously, I feel like you haven't been there. I have.
I went there for the Syracuse Georgetown game. Everyone hypes the Garden. The Garden is a very mediocre arena that happens to be in New York City.
Well, I'm not saying it's great, but it's not Fenway Park. I'm not just saying that because of Fenway Park. And you've been there a lot. I'm just saying, like, it's a solid building.
Never mind. Let's go.
My quick take on it is people will talk about Zion Williamson next year, but people will not be talking nationally about the Pelicans specifically. Like, that is just not a team that people really discuss from a national standpoint, which is why I believe this was not a good night for the NBA. Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Wednesday. McLean's going to join us coming up in less than an hour. Seth, you heard yourself in a Texans player.
I was listening to Texans radio last night, and I wasn't expecting this. I was kind of, they were having a good time. They were talking about the defensive line, so I was interested, obviously. But then they played the interview, the short interview they did with Brandon Dunn, and I always forget like how entertaining Brandon Dunn is. And a lot of people don't realize that, yeah, he is the Texans' nose tackle. It's not DJ Reader. But when they're in a 3-4, he lines up at nose tackle. But he said a few things that brought me back to what it's like being a 320-pound man living in Houston, Texas. And the biggest one was right off the bat. He talked about how he took up hot yoga this offseason.
Not too many guys in there.
Really?
Maybe like 5 guys, and it's a class of 30. Mm-hmm. So maybe like 5 guys in there, and me be included. And I try to go in the back corner.
Yeah.
The first time I went in there, everybody was like, he's got to play football. He's got to do something. I told the instructor, like, you know what I'm saying, if you don't have to give me an introduction, she wanted to. She was like, I want to let me know who's in our class. I'm like, please don't do that because it's going to turn into a madhouse. But she did it, and it got turned into a madhouse anyway.
Of course.
So talking to people, you know what I'm saying, trying to – in mid-downward dog, is tough.
Yeah.
What kind of fraud is in a hot yoga class with Brandon Dunn and starts talking to him during the actual exercise?
There's always one somebody Terrible. That just has to like ruin it with like, oh, I've got selfish things that I want to ask somebody. It's not even like, I'm not even concerned about Brandon Dunn's focus being disrupted here. It's just like the whole concept of anybody talking to somebody while they're in the middle of doing something. Yeah, and especially, and this is what that guy that was bothering Brandon Dunn needs to realize. And Brandon Dunn wasn't like actually bothered. I give him a lot of credit going to hot yoga. When I was really big and fat and I used to go to like normal yoga,
yeah,
it was, I might as well have been in hot yoga, like dripping everywhere. And then the yoga instructor always has to make a comment about it or something, like a good natured, like, isn't that funny? You're big and fat and look at how lithe and supple we all are. There's always somebody that has to point out, and this is what bothers me. Brandon Dunn, really good dude. Brandon Dunn's got somebody at some point came up to him and probably made the point that, like, even though he's so big and strong, we're better at this than you are. Like, somebody that's got to ruin it that way. Brandon Dunn knows that. He doesn't need to know, you know, because this is the same crap that used to happen to me when I was distance running. Like, obviously, I'm not built for distance running. You don't need to come up to me and tell me about how faster you are in a 5K. I get it. You weigh 145 pounds. I'm not the guy that's at the gym being like, oh, bro. Do you even bench? Like, that's not me. So don't come up and try to, like, reverse bully me because some dude was a jerk to you in high school. So there's Brandon Dunn.
Real quick, what's so good about this hot yoga stuff?
I think it's just you sweat everything out.
Okay. So you've done it, Seth? Have you done hot yoga?
I've never done. No, I don't need to.
I've done medium yoga when I was with the girl in the open relationship on that one date.
Where they keep it like 90 or something?
Yeah.
Like, how
it
hot
was
do they keep
warm.
It in hot yoga?
That's what I'm wondering. Because I tried a sauna for the first time this week, and I only lasted like 2 minutes in that thing.
I don't understand sauna at all.
I don't either.
I've never
I like the sauna.
It. Really?
I like the idea of sitting there and sweating because I feel like, all right, I'm sweating everything out. I can walk out and I am like a new person. Now, I don't do it much, but when I'm in there, I actually don't mind it.
Don't you feel like a really, like a new tired person? I always feel just wiped out after I get out of a sauna.
I just feel like intellectually it's a good thing for you.
Intellectually?
Intellectually.
You feel smarter?
No, I mean, I'm saying like...
It just feels good to sweat out the toxins.
Yeah, I feel like I've read that it's good for you, and so when I'm in there, I'm already predisposed to thinking, hey, this is a good thing for me.
That's why you're a sucker for all these little supplements that you bring in, different supplement every week.
Not recently.
This is the other thing that I found very interesting. This is good advice for young players in high school and college kids too. This is him talking about off-field distractions not bothering him at work.
I'm with my boys. I'm in my happy place. I'm comfortable. You know, whether it's a walkthrough, you know, our year six, and I'm getting geared up on the field at OTA. I love every second of it. I love the grass. I can go out there to a practice field and I can't tell you what's going on in my life. But after when I step off, I can tell you everything. But on the practice field, I really don't know what's going on. Sometimes I don't even know if I got any kids.
I like that part.
Did you feel that way?
You have a kid.
Yeah,
you
play football.
Yeah, it's an escape. I think that's why. Well, and that's why, like with basketball players, there's so many kids. I think you think about like when you're in high school, if whatever you got going on in your family life, it's just so nice to just go out and shoot baskets, you know, or just go work out at the gym by yourself. So I think a lot of guys are like that. But then some, you see the guys that somehow let their day affect them. There's a saying, like, you got to check your day at the door. Like, not being able to just compartmentalize your life is a really big issue for a lot of people. And, like, the successful athletes. That's why, who were we talking about when I got really upset? It was an NBA player. Who's basically using his personal life as an excuse. And I'm like, look at Michael Jordan. Look at Larry Bird. Those guys were disasters as human beings. It never once affected them. Like, it doesn't, you can never let your personal life affect anything that happens on the basketball court or on the football field.
I always find that to be hard in this job specifically, not letting that happen.
It's because you look at your phone.
I don't look at my phone. I look at my phone.
So you let
look at my phone.
No. You last week, you when you have something going on in your life, I've done shows with you where during every commercial break, you're like, well, I've got to figure out my travel plans. This is a disaster.
Disaster.
This is a total exaggeration.
Total exaggeration. Wait a second. Why is it harder in this job than in playing football to not let your outside life affect your what's going on in here?
There's something, because I think that when you're participating in athletics at a high level, that you have to have your mindset so focused on what you're doing that you have no space for anything else.
Maybe you should try to have that kind of focus on this job.
Ooh. I'll try. But I do not check my phone during these segments.
The difference is that you're actually talking for 4 hours too. Like it's not physically challenging, but like all your emotions and everything are kind of laid bare. So if you're agitated about something else,
you pour your emotions and your energy into this.
It flows over.
Exactly.
So and then Vandermeer asked
Brandon
Dunn how he gets pumped up for games. I like this answer.
What do you do to get hyped for the game or put on the game face when you get inside the lines on a Sunday? Because you mentioned it. You love it. You gotta love being in the mix right there in the middle all the time.
Man, you know what? gets me going is might sound, you know, about a book, but it's film study. Uh-huh. So if I'm one of those guys, if I'm been looking at film all day and I see you come out in this same formation and I'm looking, expecting for a play, oh, I'm fired up. I know what's coming. I know what's going on.
Okay.
You know, I see the play before it happens. And it's like, it's like taking a test and you know the answer.
And that's exactly, we've heard that before from like Tom Brady, but that's true. As you get older, like all of a sudden you get out on the field sometimes and you see certain formations or you recognize something from film. And a lot of times it'll come up like in the fourth quarter, you realize something that happened in the first quarter. And it does, it feels like you're cheating. It's so easy. Like you just, like I know I'm probably going to have a tackle for a loss on this play.
Did you feel better about that? Like lower levels of football too, I'd imagine, Seth, like you could see, oh yeah, we saw this before and you could like almost predict entirely where the play would go.
It didn't.
Or is it
college I did it some, but it's just not the same level because you're just not watching as much film and you don't know what you're looking for. Like it wasn't until the NFL that I really understood formations and tendencies and you just didn't have as much information available to you and the film wasn't as good. So now it's, yeah, like you spend an entire week watching the same five offensive linemen. You start to get a pretty good feel for things.
What was the best play that Seth Stradamus made in the NFL, predicting a play based off of what he had seen a little bit earlier?
I made one in Buffalo that I was really – it was my favorite play because it made me look way faster than I actually was. Because I knew what play was coming, but like on this play I was lined up on the center, but I had to loop to my left around the guard – to my left, but I knew the play was going to go to our right. But because I knew exactly what was coming, I kind of like presented a target with my ribs for the guard right before the snap. Like I tried to make myself look like a big juicy meatball. So I knew I had to do what I had to do because I had a linebacker coming on the other side of me. But like right at the snap, this guard just tries to maul me and I just quick sidestepped, like olayed him and then shot back to the right and made a tackle for a loss. And that's what I try to tell these young guys all the time. Like you can fool people into thinking you're way faster than you are if you just watch more film. And then also move around. Offensive linemen like to think they're smarter than defensive linemen. But the problem with a lot of offensive linemen is they're too smart for their own good. They're thinking all the time. So as much as you can stem around and move around before the snap and get them thinking, then all of a sudden they turn into it's paralysis by analysis. And then you can get tackles for a loss for free.
I like Brandon Dunn. He feels like he has a pretty good personality.
Yeah, he's got to do what Sean Cody used to do, the on the nose stuff. And
yes,
everything.
He should. That's a good idea.
Yeah,
if he continues to stick around and make the roster, I think that's a very good idea.
So good job by Vandermeer and John Harris with that interview. I was really that caught me by surprise. I wasn't like, oh, I need to hear some Brandon Dunn today. But I heard that interview and it put a smile on my face.